Say a good evening again to all of you and a very warm welcome. And I'm just delighted that so many of us are gathered this evening to be involved with this new experimental but very exciting new initiative of Cafe Theology. I know many of you, and many of you have the dubious privilege of knowing me, although I can see a few faces who I don't perhaps know so well. It's great to have a couple of friends from the Newbury Baptist Church as well, Nick and Phoebe. Thank you for joining us as well. So I'll just a brief introduction to myself. I'm Alex Muir. I'm largely born and bred here at St Nick's, although I went away when I was 18, as quite a few people do, to university, studied classics and French up the road in Oxford. And after that, I came back here to serve at St Nick's as a ministry apprentice for a couple of years. Will Hunter Smart bribed me to do it. No, I approached him. It was the other way around. And then, following those 2 years, I went up to Edinburgh. I did some theological study when I was a ministry apprentice here, and that led me to doing a master's in biblical studies up in Edinburgh, which was thoroughly fascinating. And I'm back sort of on a transition year at the moment, working out what's next. And I have applied for some PhD work in the New Testament. Possibility that might happen, possibility it might not, but in this season doing some tutoring on the side and of course helping out with Cafe Theology. But it's not just been me. I've been especially supported by a wonderful planning team and many of you who will contribute, no doubt, as well to this course. But I just want to just introduce some of the planning team as well, who will be leading the discussion groups as the evening goes on. So firstly, Joy, who's been amazingly practical and supportive. She even accosted me in the church car park to make sure that this course actually happens. So very grateful to her. So Andy, another resident theologian, as I was advertised as one morning, but Andy's definitely a resident theologian as well, and obviously music man extraordinaire. We've got Ian at the back, manning some of the sound, and Madeline here as well, in a very faithful stalwarts at St Nick's, with possibly the best church library among lay people. I know here. If you need any books for house studies, then Ian and Madeline are your people to go to. Great servant-hearted people. And then, of course, we've got Graham Caskey as well, actually, who's been on the planning team, a huge enthusiast for theological and ecclesial matters, currently sitting on the General Synod for... go and chat to him about that. I think there are good and bad things about it, aren't there? But is it true to say you get through most sessions fired up on a copious quantity of iron brew? Is that how it works? That's it. Anyway, so that's the core team. I'm very grateful to them and to all of you for coming out. But for all of us, regardless of our theological experience or background, setting out on a course called Cafe Theology represents a bit of a step into the unknown. I hadn't heard of the resource Cafe Theology until about 6 months ago. But very often in life, the best things come for free. And every so often in the university, the theological library in Edinburgh, someone, usually a lecturer, would have a bit of an office clear out and donate books to the library. And usually the pickings would be pretty thin on occasions such as these. But one day I happened upon a copy of Cafe Theology, the first edition. Some of you might have an orange version. A tiny Wallach's brandishing one there. The first version of that book. And I thought it looked interesting and took it. So I received Cafe Theology for free. Not for $9.99 RRP. For free. A gracious gift from some unknown lecturer in Edinburgh. And the night the bite-sized course began last term, I remembered Cafe Theology, the book, began reading it, and thought a course based on it might just offer a way into some focused theological study for some people here at St Nick's and beyond. And meanwhile, Joy and Will Hunter Smart had arranged for me to go up to Wycliffe Hall in Oxford to meet a lecturer there just to talk through some options. And while waiting at the reception up there, a friendly chap came up who I recognised slightly. He introduced himself as simply Michael. And it was a certain Michael Lloyd. I had a short chat with him. We exchanged some pleasantries, a bit of banter. He cracked some good gags, good sense of humour. Have you picked that up in the book? although I didn't manage to talk about the possibility of cafe theology here in Newbury, but I took it as confirmation that this was just about worth running as a course. And the rest really is history. The staff and others I mentioned it to were right behind it. It's very encouraging to see so many of us well here tonight. And our prayer is that this course would encourage and deepen us in our faith. Hopefully we've all had a chance to look at the first chapter on creation, which will be our main topic tonight. But before we launch into the course, it will be helpful to think a bit about what theology is more generally and where cafe theology might fit into it. You might see you've got a handout on your chairs, which might be worth consulting. You can scribble things on. We've got more pens in the office, actually. Yeah, would you be able to? Thanks, Joy. Where cafe theology might fit into things. So in the plan is for in future weeks for this section perhaps to be a bit of a recap of the previous week's stuff. But obviously we're week one, coming to this a little bit blind. Some of us are very experienced in theological matters, some of us less so. So this is an opportunity just to set a bit of a background, so a brief introduction to theology. Some other people might say different things, but here's my offering, at least. So theology comprises two Greek words, theos, God, and logos, word. So it literally means God word. Theology is talking about God. So every one of us in this room is a theologian, someone who talks about God. Hopefully all of us enjoy talking about God. And theology can also be seen as the study of God, and to talk about God, particularly in evangelistic and pastoral settings, it is vital to develop an understanding of God. Now, theology is obviously a massive subject, and I occasionally have some good-natured banter with people about whether it should belong in the realms of the arts or the realms of the sciences. And I think there's a strong case to be made for it being both, perhaps even the queen of the sciences. Given that we're in a church setting in this course, when we talk about theology, we're going to be talking about Christian theology. I and the planning team, we're making the assumption that everyone here is a Christian and wants to think about it from that perspective. But it is worth saying that people of other faiths and of no faiths at all think about God or the perceived absence of God. So they think about theology as well, albeit from different angles. And as with any subject, it's possible to identify many strands to theology, but often there's quite an overlap between these areas in theology. So it might help to think about there being four principal strands to Christian theology. So firstly, we've got biblical studies. I'm a bit biased, but I think this is a very important area. This is the study of the Old Testament, the New Testament, and other related literature, particularly in its original languages. Secondly, church history. Studying how the church has developed over the world from Pentecost up to the present day. Thirdly, we've got systematic theology, the broad ideas about theology, behind it, how it's conceptualized, and it involves breaking down notions about God, based principally on the scriptures, but perhaps not exclusively, into more understandable concepts. And fourthly, there's ethics, how theology comes into our living. For example, attitudes towards matters of life and death, money, the environment. So it's also tied up with morality as well. So I mean, that's all very broad, but hopefully provides a helpful picture. As well as different strands, there are some other key constituents of theology. Traditionally, there are three main ones, which might be roughly mapped onto the strands. Although, again, there's naturally considerable overlap between some of these areas. So there's scripture, so that's the role of normative Christian writings, so perhaps most identifiable with biblical studies. Tradition, so that's how faith has been handed on throughout time, so most identifiable with church history. And reason, that is how logic can substantiate faith and revelation of faith, so most identifiable with systematic theology and ethics. Others could be added to this list as well. An excellent fourth candidate would be the role of personal experience, followed by mission and culture and other areas besides. So what about dear old cafe theology? Where does that fit in? Cafe theology principally falls into the area of systematic theology, thinking about God more conceptually in terms of grand ideas and building blocks. It involves thinking about the very essence of God in relation to matters such as creation, life and death. It is therefore a broad area as well, drawing on a range of theological approaches, so scientific, philosophical, ethical, linguistic, psychological, many of those. So while it tries to systematize matters by making them more comprehensible and easily apprehended, and coincidentally, in many institutions, systematic theology is also known as doctrine. Systematic theology is complex stuff to which there are no simple answers. Scripture is, as we said at the start, a necessary undergirding for systematic theology. And hopefully you'll have seen that Cafe Theology, the book, is very scripturally based. But it's not the only approach. I think that's worth reiterating. Tradition, things such as the creeds, the Apostles' Creed, Nicene Creed, and reason, rational understanding based on logic, are also justifiable and important approaches. So the areas that Cafe Theology tackles, such as tonight's one of creation, are wonderful and stimulating, but there are very different ways of coming at them based on our individual stories and our traditions, our ways of thinking matters through. And this will inevitably lead us to different viewpoints. So that's why we've established the ground rules, the guidelines for discussion that Joy talked about at the start. In my 2 years at St Nick's, I went over to St Mellitus in London, and they had this great expression of generous orthodoxy. So, that means sort of making an allowance for a variety of faith perspectives, given people's different backgrounds, which I think we do well to adhere to here as well. So, let's keep those guidelines. And then finally, just to add a bit more onto the potential danger that all this learning about God, understanding theology, can be a theoretical, and occasionally that can make it a somewhat dry exercise. And I know firsthand that that's a tendency I can slip into, it all becoming quite dry and abstract, cerebral stuff. And our aim here is that we want to grow both in terms of understanding and devotion, for head knowledge to become heart knowledge and vice versa. And the book Cafe Theology offers introduces us to some key theological concepts, but it's also very practical. And our hope is to reflect that in these sessions, to focus both on understanding some of these ideas, so that's our head knowledge, so that it positively impacts our lives, the heart knowledge. And you'll see when we move into discussion groups, the questions which have been set are sort of broadly based on those two areas of head knowledge and heart knowledge. So I think that will suffice as an introduction. I've got a short clip to play to introduce us to tonight's topic, creation, which I'll just pop round the back to get fired up, so maybe have a shake out after sitting down and brace yourselves for our story in 1 minute. If you want any, you're probably okay in terms of light. that was a video as a way in to break things up. And I wonder how he found it. I mean, personally, I found it to be impressive, beautiful, powerful, and quite inspiring as well. Does that resonate with some of you as well? Any other reactions, one word to any of that?
There's a bit of evolution in there.
Absolutely. So as Sarah said, some of you probably won't be too surprised when I say that video is not from a Christian or a theistic, a sort of a God-believing source at all. As impressive as it is, there is no explicit notion of a personal creator figure being behind it all. Instead, it offers a very impersonal perspective on the origins of the universe, that it came together through chance and as a series of unplanned events, and as Sarah says, that humanity evolved from there. And that's where Michael Lloyd begins Cafe Theology, by positing that there are two main outlooks on the universe, that a person created it, or that it came about impersonally. And this is a helpful starting point. A Christian understanding, doctrine, or theology of creation starts from the position that God created the universe and that God is one. The Christian and indeed Jewish scriptures begin in the beginning God, Genesis 1 verse 1. In the Torah, Genesis is named after the first word in Hebrew, Bereshit. I didn't say a naughty word there. In the beginning, or more literally, at the head. Christian theology begins from the position that God is behind the creation of the cosmos. Lloyd offers 11 sections to explain various aspects of creation. They're all, if you've managed to get through them all, they're all helpful and some really quite subtle. But I'm going to try to summarise and filter this material down into 5 main sections that you'll see on the handout. And as I do that, as we sort of recap this chapter, I shall also intersperse a few other ways of looking at the theology of creation. I'm sure people here will have other ideas still, and that's the point of the discussion groups. But I'll intersperse a few sort of learnings of my own that I've picked up in recent years. So yeah, the first perspective is that creation is personal. And this contrasts with the increasingly impersonal world in which we live. The idea that creation is personal means that it is a place designed for love and relationship, both with one another and the Creator God who created us. Other ancient Near East accounts of the beginnings of the universe that even predate Genesis, such as the text, the Epic of Atrahasis, a few of you might know about, present creation as drudgery, hard work. In this 17th century BC account of the Epic of Atrahasis, a group of lower gods decided to create humans because they loathed these lower gods. They loathed the hard work or the drudgery that they found themselves carrying out. But instead of drudgery, God's creation offers an opportunity to connect with God as creator, to spend time in his presence, even over the most routine and mundane tasks. And secondly, creation has a purpose, and this in turn gives us a purpose. The primary purpose of creation, however, is not for ourselves, but for the Son, that is, Jesus Christ, who was with God in the beginning. Yesterday at the morning service at St. Nick's, the sermon was on the start of John 17. And in verse 5, Jesus prays, "Glorify me with the glory I had with you before the world began." Other New Testament passages from probably later Pauline letters, Colossians and Ephesians, talk about creation being through and for Christ. That's Colossians 1 verse 16. And that creation lives in harmony under Christ. Ephesians 1 verses 9 to 10. God is one, complete and sufficient in himself, but he chooses to mediate himself in relationship. systematic theology, we're going to find moves really quite fast and is very interconnected. So here we're immediately propelled into the realms of the Trinity, which we won't formally try to discuss until after Easter. But creation draws humanity into the dance of God, expressed through God being Father, Son, and Spirit. And as well as being there for the Son, the purpose of creation is for its Maker to reflect His glory. As we see in the Psalms, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. That's Psalm 24, verse 1. Consequently, humanity is called to be guardians, even representative priests of His creation. At the same time, however, the generosity of God is such that creation is there simply as an expression of beauty and to be enjoyed. Creation was also conceived by God to give us pleasure. The arts and sports that we enjoy were designed to be pleasurable. And when playing and creating, we can remember that all creativity comes from God. Although too much play and pleasure can become a bad thing and we can displace God as creator and make ourselves the creator, creation is an arena of God-given pleasure, reminding us of our status as God's creatures. Thirdly, creation is valued. For something to be valued, it needs to be valued by someone. On the personal view of creation, we're infinitely valued by God. Moreover, all creation is valued by God. I'm becoming increasingly challenged when I go running and I'm being chased by a yappy dog, that this includes animals. Animals, plants, and of course the whole environment are of significant value to God. Although it's important to remember that creation only becomes very good when humans are created. Since creation is valued, this provides an ethical and moral framework to live by. Cosmologies such as the Big Bang may very well be true, but they do not provide any real insight into how to live. This only comes through the personal aspect of creation. God values creation, and so we are called to treat it accordingly. That brings us on to our fourth point, and here I begin to fuse some of Lloyd's 11 points. That creation has order and beauty. While the disorder of creation is apparent, as we shall see more next week when we look at the fall, there is nonetheless incredible order to it. This validates carrying out scientific experiments and investigations in order to explore God's creation in even more depth. The scientist Kepler described it as thinking God's thoughts after him. Creation is also multidimensional, offering a perspective beyond the earth into the heavens and that which is invisible. Scripture constantly highlights these dimensions, and the Christian worldview offers an interaction with these other dimensions, which hopefully causes us to look beyond this temporary earthly home on a stronger basis than other philosophies and spiritualities we might hear of. Anyone who has admired a sunset like the one we had this evening any time recently will testify that creation is undeniably beautiful and ornamental, and it is also inherently good. The goodness of creation recurs throughout the Genesis creation account at the end of each day. Moreover, physicality, including our bodies, is good. We are made in the image of God and reflect some of His glory. Although the world is currently subject to frustration, God promises the salvation of the world when we shall be reclothed, which highlights that the body is not all bad, as in many ancient and some contemporary philosophies. And fifthly, and most crucially, creation is utterly dependent on God. A personal account of creation means that something was created out of nothing. Paul reminds us of this in Romans chapter 4, verse 17, when he says that God gives life to the dead and calls into being things that were not. God is sufficient in Himself and ultimately does not need anyone or anything, but He chooses to give freely. Creation is a free act. This is enormously liberating and means that we need not take ourselves too seriously. We are who we are because of God. Creation is, however, distinct from God. It does not demand to be worshipped like Him. Although God created the universe and remains involved in it, He's separate from creation. Creation would not be as fallen as it is at the moment if creation was fully divine. Instead, we can say that creation is open to God. The whole cosmos belongs to him, and he is interested in every aspect of our lives, longing for us to spend time in relationship with him. So these then are some of the ways to approach creation theologically. Creation is personal, purposeful, valuable, ordered and beautiful, and above all, totally dependent on God. And all this thinking about creation leads to a practical response. Lloyd suggests several such. An understanding of creation causes us to lift our eyes in wonder beyond ourselves, to be thankful, as well as to meditate upon creation. Exploration of creation is to be encouraged, and our role is to be vice-regents, vice-rulers of it, as well as to care and preserve it, to be above all faithful ministers of creation. Well, I think that's enough paraphrasing from me. We're going to move in, I'm sorry, slightly late, sort of more towards 20 to 9. I think we started a little bit late, a bit longer this week with some introductions, but we'll still have a good 20, 25 minutes at the very least in groups together to discuss some of what we've read, hopefully, before coming along to these sessions and basically the presentation, how it's been presented from the front. And you'll see in the, well, on the handout there are some discussion questions, which I'll also put them up here on the PowerPoint as well. So yeah, now's the time for us to move into discussion groups. So I think the idea is to take a chair. We're aiming for about groups of eight, and we're going to leave it up to you guys basically where you go. Perhaps we need to be careful how to do this. Perhaps try and find a mixture of people you know well, perhaps some people you don't know so well. And Joy, Ian, Madeline, and Andy and Graham will each take a table, and I'll float around and make sure we keep the time better than we have been doing so far this evening. But thank you very much for your attention. Shall I just say a prayer for us as we move into discussion groups? Yes, so dear Lord, thank you so much for your creation and all these perspectives and aspects of it, Lord. Help us now as we discuss it in groups to understand you even more, Lord, and how you've created us and loved us so much, Lord. I pray that you would be with us in this next section, Lord, igniting our hearts and setting our minds on fire for you. Amen.